This is a podcast from Minute Media.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
Justin.
I'm Pete.
And we are coming to you live from a couple of places on the internet. We're coming to you from Crowdcast, a.k.a. The Cast, YouTube, a.k.a. The Tube, or later on iTunes, a.k.a. The Tunes, Stitcher, a.k.a. The Titcher, Spotify, a.k.a. The Totify. What?
These are just the names that we have to say by contract.
We do not have to say them all.
Yes. Yeah. Spotify told us we had to say that they're called
TuneIn, aka the UNIN. Or check it out on your RSS. Not going to do that one. Guys, we have a packed show for you tonight. So much stuff going on. Two great guests are in the show. But first, it is that time that we pay tribute to our excellent Patreon supporters, the people who keep the show going. For real, we would not be able to do it without all of them, because every bit of money that comes in goes straight into supporting and keeping the show and all of the podcasts we do going. If you'd like to support it, patreon.com/comicbookclub. But anybody $5 or above a month, we give them a shout out, a thank you here on the show. So we definitely work this out beforehand. I don't need to say this, but I'll go first. Pete can go second, and then Justin.
Are you scared, Alex?
It's our first October show.
I thought I was going to go. I am in costume, so that's probably pretty scary.
So we're going to kick it off with Aaron C. Hollis,
Adam Marks,
Adriel Moreland,
Elena Fontenot,
Amanda Harris,
Amy Gonzalez,
Andrew Edge,
Andrew Primo,
Andrew Tillman,
Beercat PhD,
Benjamin Brown,
Carly W,
Christina Jaramillo,
Chris Terrazzini,
Clemens Luer,
Curtis LaRock,
Demand Ryan,
Dan Snow,
Daniel Fuentes,
Daniel Pete something Cabrera.
Daniel Pete the Poodle, hashtag Pete the Poodle Cabral.
Hashtag Pete the Poodle. That means it's real. Daniel Warden.
Danny Heck.
Dennis Scott.
Derek Mainhart.
Dylan LJ.
Eduardo Martinez.
Emmett Quish.
Aaron Dorian.
Jeffrey Risher.
Gerard Devilliers.
Isaac Carter.
James Connolly.
James Kurtz.
Jason Donahue.
John George.
Jonathan John.
Jonathan McCool.
Joshua Gibson.
Joshua W. Broxson.
Catherine Anidson.
K.C. Newhaven.
Kevin Grimes.
Kevin Kleinrock.
Kieran Broderick.
Cody Thomas.
Kyle.
Lee Brown.
The name I always get, Leewana Thomas.
Lucas Inc.
Mark Carrillo.
Mark Zeller.
Matt Tice.
Megan Thigpen.
Michael Tillman.
Mitchell McDonald.
Nathan Diaz.
Nelson Martinez.
Nick Grayson.
Off-White Savior.
Official CBC chef and Feist beer magnate Brett Macris.
Omnia Soul Art.
Oren Dix.
Pablo Martinez.
Pedro A. Wrangle.
Perry Talaferro.
Pete's Pretty Kitty.
Primetime Pauly G.
Rev Mikey.
Sarah Schottmuller.
Sarah Schaefer.
Scott Carpenter.
Scott England.
Stanley.
Steve Cook.
Tamila Rush.
Taylor Bryan.
The Big Flood.
The 12 Bench.
Victor Perez.
Will Buchanan.
And of course, Zika's Viral Comics, baby.
Yeah, thank you real to all of you for supporting the show. We really, really appreciate it. Again, we could not keep all of these things going without all of your great support, whether you're at the $5 level or above or below. Every single dollar counts. So again, if you want to support it, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Now, later in the show, yes, Justin, what were you going to say?
I was going to say, you can get your name there to have Pete slightly mispronounce or have to say something funny about himself.
There you go.
Feel free to throw a nickname in there. Alex gave a great example of nicknames for podcast websites earlier.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So later in the show, we are going to have Corin Shadby is going to be here to talk about his book Lugosi, based on Bela Lugosi. But first, we are going to invite our first guest here. Her name is Sophie Escobes. Hopefully I didn't mangle that name, but she is the creator of Witches of Brooklyn, What the Hacks, from Random House Graphic Novels, officially helping us kick off spooky season here on Comic Book Club with a spooky graphic novel. Sophie, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me, guys. And thank you to all the supporters.
Yes. Oh, thank you.
Doing the business.
Absolutely. Now, Sophie, so this is the sequel to What the Hex.
Witches of Brooklyn.
Sorry, I got that
wrong. That's the second one.
What the Hex is the second one. There you go. I mixed it up.
I was prepared.
I got very distracted with all the names we were saying. So you are, did you live in Brooklyn at one point?
I did. For about 13 years.
Oh, wow.
And we just moved, I mean, just a year ago, we crossed the border and established ourselves in Canada.
Oh, nice.
So not to get too in the weeds here, but I lived in Park Slope for the past 10 years. And now I live in Sunset Park in Brooklyn. Do you mind if I ask where you were located and where potentially you based Witches in Brooklyn?
I moved in 13 years. I moved quite a lot in Brooklyn.
Sure, you have to.
Everyone else, you know, started. I mean, when we had our first child, we were living in Copper Hill and then moved to Park Slope when the second one arrived, and when the third one arrived, we were like,
That's the official sound effect of having a third child. By the
way. Yeah. You're like, we moved to Dismas Park, and that's where the witches live. In fact, that's when we landed in Dismas Park, walking around with the kids, we were like, "Look at all these old houses! I mean, there must be witches living around."
So did it start then with a conversation with your kids and kind of speculating there, and spun off into a graphic novel, or was there a specific germ, a specific house or place that gave that inspiration?
I mean, there is a specific like germ, and it's germ. It's not the right word. Seed. It's better.
Seed.
it's a sketch. It all started with one sketch that I wasn't planning to go anywhere at first. It's just like it's a sketch that I made of Silly Man, like the one of the old lady, who's like with a screwdriver trying to take something off the jaw of a huge gigantic lion. And I don't know why, I was just like, hey, that's fun. I mean, I like that character. And I felt that there were a lot of seeds of story, you know, in that drawing. And I did a quick story with her and the lion and then her friend. And little by little, you know, like moving to Dismas, I was just like, yeah, that's the perfect setting because, you know, you want witches, you want Brooklyn, but you're like, where can I fit witches? I wasn't seeing them really living in either a brownstone or like a modern building. There was no way. And then Dismas Park, I was just like, yes, that's it.
For those of us who don't live in Dismas Park, can you tell us about the weird, because I know there are a lot of houses that just are wildly different from each other.
Like a lot of old Victorian houses, like independent houses with like gardens, and all those houses have like their personality, you know, like colors and all like the woodwork, and it's pretty cool. You should go around Halloween. It's amazing.
Yeah. There's also a lot of weird gardens with that. That's the part to me that adds this spooky element of like, what's back there? They're fenced with like vines reaching over. It's a wild place.
Well, what about witches then? Because this is something that comes up a lot on the show. there's a lot of different takes on witches. There's a lot of different ways of hitting magic and coming up with the rules of magic. So what was important to you in setting up this world magically versus just Brooklyn-y?
But that's really what, I mean, the witch is probably like the magic, I mean, the creator of legend, of stories that really, I mean, at least for me, stands, you know, rooted in reality, but holding magic in her hand. Mm-hmm. Or rather, witches have like magic in one hand and reality in the other. Mm-hmm. And they're like, there's this bridge, you know, and I guess it really, really excites my imagination to have like those two things like mixed together. And so why witches? Because because they're creature of magic, and they're like really in touch with their like inner spirit and with nature. And what was your question again?
let me throw something in there, because actually I really love that answer, that witches have one hand in the magic world and one hand in the real world. Like mm-hmm. traditionally they're sort of doing magic at night, you know, in secret to affect the world around them, to like bring justice to something that is bad or do harm to someone. So like mm-hmm. I really like that interplay. I think that plays really well in Brooklyn too.
Yeah. And like my witches are very much in line with your traditional witch, you know, like who knows a lot about plants. They're healers, they're like really involved in their community, taking care of the elder people, and maybe midwives. And like, that's my line of witches, you know, like the one that they were burning back then.
Great. So what was important then when you were tackling the sequel to the book? What was important in terms of expanding the world?
I really wanted to introduce the coven, you know, like all the witches that work together. And I really liked the idea of this group of old ladies and trying to bring more like balance into the crazy world that is New York, that is our world. I was about to say New York, it's everywhere the same. You know, like the peace circle that they're making all together, trying to rebalance this craziness. I mean, that was important to me to show that, you know, a little bit like the Buddhists are like talking about, you know, our meditation session are like just there to bring balance in the world. So I really wanted to introduce that. And I had that idea for you know, because the old plot about like the two statues, it's really like, I think it's on Carroll, I don't remember now. It's Carroll Street and Sixth Ave, I believe. Mm-hmm. If you drive by, you will see where the idea come from. And I really wanted to place that, I mean, to work around that.
I do love, we're looking at some of the pages here on the video show if you're listening later, and I do love that the old ladies all look like people that I probably saw walking around Brooklyn earlier today. Were you basing these people on life at all? Was there anybody you pulled from in either your real life or people you saw walking around?
No, not just one person. I mean, it comes from definitely like what I can observe. That's probably one of my favorite thing to do in life, is just sit at a cafe, sit somewhere and watch people. Mm. And Brooklyn is the best place one of the best places in the world to do that. It's just like best TV ever for me. Like, look at I love it. So yeah, I sketch, I take notes.
Was it difficult? Is it difficult at all to channel the idea of Brooklyn now that you don't live there at all?
But in the third book, I'm taking Effie out of Brooklyn to summer camp.
There it is.
But I'm not that far. And now that the COVID will please low, will count down, I'll be able to go back more often. But no, I'm in love with Brooklyn. You know, when you're in love with something, with someone, it's there, you know. And obviously I will need to... I mean, it's less easy to get the reference, you know, to draw a place. I will have to go back, but the story will still happen in Brooklyn, and I will go back and forth, Brooklyn forever.
I did want to point out a comment here in the comments on Crowdcast from Liwana Nananana says, I also love that they're old ladies and not entirely trendy young teens. Was there any hesitance either on your or Random House's part to be like, oh, we're going to do a YA novel that's mostly about old ladies?
No, that came from me, in fact. But I mean, the Random House team, if I can put parentheses here, you guys are amazing. So incredible, and I feel extraordinarily lucky to work with these people. But no, the old lady was my idea, because that's something that I'm kind of annoyed with, is that these days, you know, old age equals to like basically like I don't know, but nobody talk about old people. Old people are not cool, you know. It's like it's all about being young, being like beautiful, gorgeous, and it's like, yeah, we're putting like being young on the top of the mountain when really old people are amazing.
Well, and
agreed.
And, aging.
All going there, so they better be
exactly. Yeah, exactly. I'm very close.
Like
very
example
close.
Of amazing old people that are still lively and making jokes. Yeah. That you want to hang out with.
That's I also feel like a lot of the fiction I grew up reading, like the older people were the sort of the secret keepers or the ways that the young characters got into the older world or the magical world, that is. So like, I feel like I love that you bring the older characters forward. It makes much more sense to have them know more about magic because they know more about everything.
Yeah. I've been there longer.
Since this is the official kickoff of spooky season, though, if you look at like Starbucks, they've been doing it since mid-August or so. I did want to ask you, what is your best Starbucks slam?
Takedown.
Slipped it right in there. Wow. That's it. Starbucks is like, well, gonna fold up my coffee, put it in my briefcase, and
we wake up tomorrow and they're all just empty stores.
They're gone. They're like, we heard your podcast and we're bummed out.
I don't know how spooky Starbucks has been. I feel like you're talking about pumpkin spice.
I am talking about pumpkin spice. I was mixing up things.
You pretty ease up on the spooky stuff.
Yeah, I think we went a little far afield here. But to get back to it, Sophie, what is your best Halloween tip? Like, what do you like to do on Halloween, or what's a good thing? For Halloween.
What I like to do on Halloween, that's a tricky one, you know, because I didn't grow up with Halloween. So my Halloweens are kind of more recent and like linked with my kids. So, I'm crazy about peanut butter cups. That's something that has to be for Halloween. That's something that I discovered when I moved to the States. I was just like, oh my God, why nobody told me about that before? It's amazing.
It's our best kept secret in America.
Yeah, that's right. Reese's peanut butter cups.
But no, just like putting on, you know, working on our costume with the kids. That's pretty fun. Brainstorming what you're going to wear, makeup, hair dye, all the craziness.
And where did you say you live now? Do you live in live in Canada? In Montreal. Montreal. Oh, great Montreal. Town. How's Halloween up there? Is that as much of a...
I don't know yet because last year...
That's your first... Of course, because of COVID,
All right.
But I'm not able to tell you that. Let's meet up again in 2 months and then...
All right, absolutely. Great. We'll just check back in. Real quick check-in about Halloween in Montreal, and then we'll let you go. What else... So you're working on the third book. What else do you want to plug, if anything?
So I'm working on the third book, and hopefully I'll keep on making them as long as the readers are reading them. And let's chat out about the Derby Daredevil. From Kit Rosewater. Sorry about that, Kit. Kit Rosewater. I illustrated that series a couple months ago, and it's really cool. And that's it. And keep reading graphic novel, people, because graphic novel are amazing. It's the best storytelling medium ever.
We agree here on the Comic Book Show.
Yeah,
Sophie, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you.
Happy advanced Halloween, and congrats on the book.
Keep up the great work. We love them.
Great to meet you.
All right. Once again, that was Sophie Escobase, and the book is Witches of Brooklyn, What the Hex. It's in stores everywhere right now from Random House Graphic Novels, and is a perfect all-ages gift for Halloween.
I mean, it's such a great idea. I mean, grandmas are so hot right now. You know, combine that with witches. It's just, it's a fantastic book. It's so much fun, and you get to kind of see Brooklyn and fun old people in such a great way. I think she's killing it.
Just so we're clear, Pete, the books that we've reviewed lately, you just love a grandma in an action sequence. When you say grandmas are so hot right now, we know exactly what you mean.
Yeah, we know what you mean. I'd also like to point out your real-life girlfriend in the comments here was like, can't wait to be a crone, and I assume that's to continue your relationship, right?
What? I don't know.
Because then she'll
be a grandma.
Don't make
things weird,
then.
Man. Don't make things weird.
I mean, always. All right, why don't we move on to our next guest here. I'll invite him into the stream. He is the creator of Lugosi, The Rise and Fall of Hollywood's Dracula. His name's Corin Chaudhmi. Corin, welcome back to the show. Good to see you again. Hello, how are you?
Hello.
Can you hear us?
Can you hear me? Yeah.
Yes, we can hear you. I think there's like a little bit of a delay there. It's okay. Very slight. But...
Got it.
Good to have you here. Good talking about Lugosi. This is your second second biography, right? Or at least the second one we've talked to you about. We had you on to talk about your Rod Serling biography, and now you're on to Lugosi. What was appealing about Bela Lugosi in particular as a follow-up to Rod Serling?
Well, it was, you know, it was hard to follow Rod Serling up because he had such an incredible life. But I think Lugosi also was someone that just lived a crazy life. They were very different people, but he was just this really over the top, you know, romantic European type person. If you ever seen him in the movies, you know, maybe Dracula is actually not the best example, but if you see some of the other movies, he's always like gives 190%, and he's just like very dramatic. And that was also his life. He was just like, you know, big spender, big lover, had, you know, many wives, you know, had many ups and downs in his career, and also, you know, substance abuse problems back in the day, which is impressive that all the way back then was able to do that. But it's a great life story. And, you know, I was just attracted to the drama of it. So it was just like perfect for a graphic novel.
What is it about these older stars, though, that particularly draws you in?
It's hard to tell. I think there's like almost like a magic about it where, you know, they're not around anymore. They're encapsulated in film. They're just legendary. There's like, you know, this Lugosi was the first person to portray on screen the character of Count Dracula. There was no one else before him. And he helped establish this character. He, like, you know, everybody knows the kind of staple of the count with the accent and the widow's peak. That was Lugosi. He helped create it. So there's just like, if you go back, you know, and you dig back in the past, you can see the sources of a lot of things. And I feel like, you know, of course, there's things before him. There's Nosferatu. There's other stuff. But in a sense, he was the first. And it was one of the first Hollywood, if not the first Hollywood supernatural movie. Don't quote me about that. But kind of important part of film history.
I also feel like actors back then came from such different lifestyles. It wasn't as much of the way it is now, where it feels like you're sort of groomed from a young age to become an actor. So people's life experience was wildly different, both on the front end. And because of that, they were like, I'm going to live however I want. I don't need to be beholden to any of this stuff. I'm going to live
totally
hard.
Totally. I mean, the thing today, I think that you see actors and most of them are like, you know, on this health regimen and drinking their like smoothies with like greens and all that stuff. And back then it was, especially for the men, I think they were just kind of like, well, I'm going to live this, you know, manly life, and I'm going to drink, you know, alcohol for breakfast and smoke cigars. And that's just what it's supposed to be to be a man. And, you know, that's why a lot of them looked like pretty weathered by the time they were like 15.
It only enhances the role, the performance.
Right.
If you're going to look like, you're going to look like death. You better live hard.
Me and my wife saw a movie with Humphrey Bogart a few months ago, and I was like, how old is he here, like 60 or 70? And he was like 45. So you know, but Lugosi, actually, I feel like he was actually like fairly healthy for the most part. He was kind of a man contradiction. He exercised a lot and went on hikes, and so, you know, at the same time he drank a lot and other stuff. So
what kind of research was involved in putting this together? Where did you have to dig into to find info for the book?
Well, I just read every biography that I could get my hands on, and you know, I just found there was also a website called the Bela Lugosi blog that collected all the old newspapers and interviews and stuff like that. So it was just a lot of that. And also I had to just watch a lot of his movies because I wasn't familiar with the whole oeuvre of his work. So I didn't watch all 99 of them, but I watched a good amount. Yeah, I know. Sorry.
I got to think a lot of those back then are maybe rough watch these days.
Yeah. I mean, some of them, you know, he had his low points and, you know, there's some movies where he's like, you know, chasing gorillas with a whip and stuff like that. And I'm like, I don't know if I'm watching this one. But I definitely watch the classics, and the classics are amazing. So whoever, and I mentioned the ones that I thought were important or the ones that I love in the book, there's actually like almost like clips from them. And so I think that whoever reads the book, maybe it'll be a good entry point for watching those movies, like The Black Cat, which is just a lot of fun. And a lot of the, I think a lot of the ones that he's facing off against Boris Karloff were really fun.
There's a couple of people in the comments here, and I feel like this is something I've heard before, and also about the Nosferatu movie. People are like, that guy's a real vampire. The guy from Nosferatu and Bela Lugosi, like, those guys are real vampires. What did you encounter that while you were working on this book, and can you tell us if he was?
Yeah.
Well, you know, he's right behind me, so I can't.
Yeah. I knew it.
There's definitely not. He was born technically in Transylvania, which is kind of interesting.
Suspect. Oh! That's a big clue. Yeah. That's a big clue yes. The vampire yes.
But, you know, and the thing that was really funny is that he kind of embraced that persona. So they wrote about his house that it was full of, you know, like his coffee table was shaped like a coffin, and he had like an inkwell that was like you know, a skull, and you went in there and like everything was draped in giant velvet curtains. So, and he kind of hated, like, he would wake up late in the day. So there's some stuff that's a little, you know,
you started with no and you're walking toward yes.
Yeah.
He did it like garlic. He was afraid of crosses.
Unfortunately, no, he was, you know, he would still be with us if it wasn't, you know, if he was. But
I mean, who's to say he isn't?
Who's to say? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Somebody check the coffee table. Maybe the glass is just really heavy on top of it.
Do you find it all while you're researching these books, while you're looking into them, that you find, I hesitate to use this word, but you find some sort of character in that person's life who suddenly becomes as interesting as the person you're working on? Like, you're doing a Rod Serling book, and suddenly this other person that interacted with Rod Serling is like, oh, that would be another great subject.
Not so much with him. I'm researching something else now where one of the characters turning out to be kind of very interesting. But what was kind of interesting in the Lugosi book was the whole history of horror film. So I found out about the Universal, kind of the story of the Universal horror movies. And that was really interesting. And how, you know, it was Carl Laemmle, and Carl Laemmle Jr., he basically made his son the head of the studio, and his son drove the studio to the ground, made these like really expensive movies, and they ended up being booted out of their own studio. So I was like, wow, there's a whole story there. So yeah, you find out a lot of, you know, things about the world that the character exists in.
Well, speaking of the Universal Monsters, I mean, I think I know the answer to this one, but I'm curious to get your input. Universal keeps trying to bring it back. They keep trying to be like, okay, here we go. We're launching this whole universe of our classic.
Everybody loves these monsters. We're going to go crazy with these monsters.
Here we go. It's a dark universe of characters, and it never works. It never takes off. Why do you think that is?
It's a good question. I mean, they're all like, I haven't watched them because they're all god awful. So, I mean, like, here they are. But was that, do you know if The Mummy that was in the 90s with Brendan Fraser, was that Universal?
Yeah.
Cause that was kind of good.
That was great. And I think they tried to launch a whole franchise off of The Mummy. They even got to the third one. They had the Scorpion King spinoff with The Rock.
Yes, The Rock.
Yeah, but none of that stuff has worked.
I don't know. I mean, I think that they're, again, they work in their own kind of old film world, and they don't seem to translate very well, you know, to contemporary times. And I think someone should take on, you know, the challenge of taking Dracula and updating him, you know, but so far, you know, that hasn't happened.
I mean, I feel like a lot of those monsters, the things that were scary about them don't scare us anymore because we've just heard it too much. It's like a mummy is just like, I don't know, all the bandages, slow moving.
Well, I think like, the one exception you got to find, and this is really hard to do, but I don't know if you guys saw the recent Invisible Man movie, but they found a really good metaphor
that was,
there. Like
that
a
was very good.
Which is great. Yes, and awesome. I think the same guy is doing a Wolfman movie, maybe. So again, if you could find that level of resonance for the modern day, potentially it could work.
Yeah, I think it was updated in a really good way. And because it was had that level of paranoia and surveillance and all these things. And I think that you have to be smart about it. And kind of adjust it to that, to our current times for it to work. So
Yeah.
Maybe if the bandages were like very fashionable. Like that's the real prison.
Right. Line. Instead of bandages, maybe they were like TikToks or something. Right.
Oh, that's smart. Oh. That's good. I just like hearing you say TikTok.
Yeah, a lot more dance. I just had to explain to my 3-year-old what a mummy is. I have to explain to him all the monsters, and he's just like really into it. But it's very hard to, because you're like, you know, you have to stop at some point because you're like, well, it was like a dead person embalmed.
And so
buried.
They took the organs out of the dead king. And
then my wife is
and
like,
replaced them with a cat.
Yeah. Was it a cat?
No, I mean, they didn't put the cat inside of the body, but they removed the organs
and
then
buried
them with their cat. Yeah, there you go. This is your next book.
That's not that weird.
You'd be buried with your cat?
Well, I want to be buried with my
Pete's
fellow
cat?
Hosts. No, I want to be buried with Pete's cat. Weird request. But you have to do it if I die first, but I'm the youngest. Let's not forget.
Okay. Corin, now that you have tackled, I mean, you said you're working on something else. I don't know how much you can tease about it, but is it another classic film or TV star, or are you moving more into the modern day potentially?
There is a book that I'm wrapping up now that was written by Dave Kushner, who is a tech writer and gaming writer. And it's about Nolan Bushnell and Ralph Baer, who are basically the creators of video games. They had sort of a feud, and it's really like, you know, it's kind of like about the question of who really created video games. So that's fun, and it takes place, it's a little more contemporary, it's like the 60s and the 70s, so a lot of bell bottoms and disco balls and nerds in the garages.
That sounds
I'm down
very
with
cool.
most of that stuff. So
Corin, good seeing you again. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
We let you go, I want to ask you the same question we asked Sophie. Best Halloween tip.
Again, like my son's really young, so he's getting started with all this stuff. I don't really, you know, I would say that as a parent and you don't have a lot of time, try to push your son to like be a robot. Because that's the easiest costume to make. So, I mean, that's worked last year. So,
all right, that's a great tip.
Be a robot.
Awesome. A better robot.
Some boxes, some Amazon boxes, and some spray paint.
Perfect.
You're good to go.
Great tip, Corin. Thank you so much for coming on. Good seeing you. Have a good night.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Bye. See ya.
All right. Once again, that is Corin Chandmi. The book is called Lugosi: The Rise and Fall of Hollywood's Dracula. It's out now from
Sounds interesting.
Yes, definitely check it out. And folks, we're going to move on with our next section, which is my favorite section because you all make it up. It is your audience question. And for audience questions, I see a bunch of you have already done this, but if you want to drop a question, ask a question here on Crowdcast or in the comments over on YouTube, I'll keep an eye on those. But first, before we get into that, it is time to pay some bills.
Pay the piper!
Thanks to this week's sponsor, Manscaped. Autumn is in the air, and the pumpkins are in the patch, and our friends at Manscaped are here to make sure you don't carve your pants pumpkins when you're grooming, if you know what I'm saying.
Pants pumpkins. That's the way my doctor refers to my testicles.
When you're getting older, you got to get your pants pumpkins tested. Right, Pete?
Sure.
Thanks. Make sure you're keeping things fresh this fall with the leaders in male grooming and the brand new fourth generation performance package. Boys, Hey, boys, get ready for a cuffing season like no other. Ready to take the leap into fall with Manscaped? Join the 2 million men worldwide using Manscaped by going to manscaped.com for 20% off plus free shipping with the code FANSIDED20. Now, in this package, you're going to get a cornucopia of products.
Way to move so quickly past Halloween into Thanksgiving. I appreciate it.
You're going to find a couple of presents under your tree.
Nope, that's too far. Yes, I mean, you're going to get so many things. And perfect for Halloween.
Looks like all of the things in the performance package came out of their hole, and now there's going to be six more weeks of winter.
Oh, boy. Justin just left on that bit. He was like, you know what? I'm not going to do this anymore. I'm not.
Well, he feels very strongly about Punxsutawney Phil, so.
Yeah, you know. He is a huge Phil guy.
I do. Never mind. That's stupid. Great. What a brief escape. Terrifying escape from
So, yes, again, there's a couple of things you're going to get in this package. You're going to get the Lawnmower 4.0 that Pete loves. You're going to get the Weed Whacker that's going to take care of your nose and ears. Crop Preserver Ball Deodorant. And what else? There was something else. Oh, you're going to get a travel bag.
Hold it all.
Yes. There you go.
Get 20% off plus free shipping with the code FANSIDED20 at manscaped.com. That's 20% off plus free shipping with the code FANSIDED20 at manscaped.com. Make your balls a priority this fall. This is the season. Choose Manscaped. Your balls will thank you.
And to be clear, we're talking about your space balls.
Good.
Yeah.
Pete's favorite part.
Just wanted
part.
To throw that in there.
Thanks.
Now, before the show, Pete was like, oh, the ads changing? That part always made me smile.
Bruce Wayne may appear to be a wealthy playboy, but beneath his facade, his true identity is that of the Batman, waging an endless war against crime. Join the Caped Crusader in Batman, The Audio Adventures, the first scripted audio original featuring Batman and his villainous rogues gallery in a world premiere story of life and death in Gotham City, debuting exclusively on HBO Max. Starring Jeffrey Wright as Batman and a who's who of incredible Saturday Night Live alums, this rollicking adventure, told across 10 episodes, is written and directed by Emmy winner Dennis McNicholas, includes devilishly delightful original music by Doug Bossi, and performances by Rosario Dawson, John Leguizamo, Chris Parnell, Melissa Villaseñor, Seth Meyers, Jason Sudeikis, Brooke Shields, Fred Armisen, and many, many more. Go to hbomax.com/Batman Audio Adventures for more and stream Batman the Audio Adventures only on HBO Max. So we got a couple of questions here. I'll also mention, we mentioned this at the end of the show, but I want to throw this in here. If you want to leave us a question in the iTunes comments on our podcast, we will read that on the show if you're not able to make the live show. Or leave us a book, absolutely any book you want us to review. Again, in the iTunes comments.
Not just like War and Peace.
Any book.
War and Peace. Anna Karenina.
The Bible.
The Bible. Literally any book. We will read it and review it on the show. But let's get to the ones that are here right now. We got one from Nat Townsend.
Well, we should talk briefly
about we got to talk about our beer.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, so many things. So many things going on. So this is the kickoff of Oktoberfest, and our amazing, amazing CBC chef, Brett Macris, provided us with a beer to drink on enormous, as big as our head.
Yeah.
This is an oil drum of alcohol.
I came home from the hospital, and they're waiting for me. In the mail was a giant beer, and I've never felt so loved. It was really just a beautiful moment.
I love that you casually dropped the
hospital. Now, but you know we have to ask a follow-up about that, and it's weird that you said that without saying why. So please tell us what you were doing, what you were manscaping at the hospital.
I'm 45 years old, so I had to go for my colonoscopy. You know, you got to check things, make sure they're up to speed and running well. So
Pete, I know before you go any further, I asked the doctor to send me the results before you. So I'll let you know if everything's ship shape.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a tease. We're going to reveal Pete's results on our Stack podcast that rolls out Wednesday.am in the comic book club feed.
It's a horrible idea. But I just want to say, Brett Macris, you are a mensch. And thank you for sending somebody a beer in the mail, a giant beer. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful thing to do for somebody.
Pete's space prostate thanks you.
Just to read a couple of notes about this beer, though, because Brett sent some very detailed notes about it. It is from a brewery owned by a good friend of his in New Orleans, just a few blocks from his house. The brewery is called Brew Carré. He wrote out, this is very nice, Brett, wrote out the pronunciation for me because he noted, because Alex is not good with pronouncing New Orleans names, which is true.
Not just New Orleans, Brett. Almost a lot
also
of
the
names.
Word piano that bothers Pete a lot for some reason. A play on Vieux Carré, which is the traditional name for the French Quarter, meaning Old Quarter. This is specifically a fest beer, which is what they now traditionally serve in Germany during Oktoberfest. Yeah. Since Oktoberfest was canceled again this year, he thought it would be fun to celebrate this week's drink with the CBC Slack drinkers, which I know a couple of folks are drinking fest beers and other Oktoberfest beers. Now, continues, says, but official CBC chef Brett Macris, aren't Marzen's the traditional beer of Oktoberfest, you may ask? Not anymore. The original Oktoberfest was more like a Dunkel, but then in the mid-1800s, they made it lighter in ABV and an easier drinking beer with more caramel notes, which I'm definitely getting off this. I don't know if you guys, but like there's a really
this beer
good
is excellent. So I really appreciate it. And fortunately I get a lot of chances to taste it. this is a strong leader.
Yes, and so these have more malt, so you can session all day. Then in the 1970s, the trend turned towards even lighter beers, but still easy drinking with malty notes and balanced hops, so people could session even longer. All of them are traditional lagers, and all of them are great for celebrating Oktoberfest. At Brew Carré, they name all their beers, and this one is called Trust Us, We're Prostfessionals. A play on the German version.
Prostfessional.
Okay, he didn't write that one out. How was I supposed to know?
That's how you say it.
Prost.
Okay. Yeah. A play on the German version of saying cheers, which is Prost.
Prost. And I'm wearing the traditional Hosen.
Oh, he said Hosen.
I bought when awesome. I went to Munich Oktoberfest like 8 or 9 years ago for a friend of the pod, John Gabers' bachelor party.
Oh, wow. How drunk did you get?
Strongly drunk, drank many, many, many liters. Went to the tents, stood on the tables, did my best to take a leader down. It was truly a blast. Definitely worth doing once it comes back.
Wow.
And thank you. Edward Doherty still fits. It does still fit.
Similarly, I'm drinking out of the 59 glass provided to me by Sci-Fi for the show Resident Alien. So, like, it's a very similar story.
Well, makes sense.
That has nothing. You're just
Both lived experiences Alex and I had just now.
I did want to say that this beer is very delicious. It's more complex than a light beer, a light American beer, but the drinkability is very enjoyable. I could enjoy a bunch of these, and I think it's just a fantastic beer.
Stray, shout out how we can get more Brew Carré. Is it can we order it online? Do we have to go to New Orleans and get some on our own?
Brewcarré.com, BrewCarré.com. Check it out there. Highly
check
recommended as Def. We continue to pivot into a drinking and food podcast.
Yes!
Let's get back to comic books. This is from Nat Towson. Do any of you dare attend Comic-Con in person? What's the deal with NY Comic-Con this year? So this is happening this weekend, and this is a thing that legitimately I've been wrestling with for the past couple of days because I have a pass to Comic-Con. They are making sure everybody is vaccinated, which is great, so you have to check in beforehand, so that's cool, but I'm still like very iffy on the idea of it, honestly.
Matt instantly asking in the comments, give me your pass, Alex. I think his question was a loaded one. I mean, I get it. It's a tough call. This year, run up till the end of this year is tough for all events. It feels in some cases, in some ways, like, oh, we're close, we can do normal stuff. But in other ways, it's like, ah, it feels like we're not. So it's dicey. I don't begrudge anyone either way. It's all about the sort of accepted risk you want to take. I am not going, but only because I have to be out of town this weekend. I feel like I would go if I was in town.
I'm definitely curious to check it out just to see what the crowds are like, given everything that's going
on. Yeah, maybe it's lighter. You can go around and see a
exactly.
lot more.
It was just very weird to me, like a month ago, when I got an invitation to a cocktail party at New York Comic Con, where I was like, are we doing this? Really? Is that the sort of thing that's happening right now? But I don't know.
Can you tell a story without like flexing on us? Is it possible? No. Can you get one out?
That was not a flex. That was
I was invited to a cocktail party because I'm a fancy person.
Yeah, that was the implication. What are you getting at?
It would be nice if you just tell a story.
I also think there's some the hesitancy we have, I think, is a lot about like, this feels weird, but in many cases I don't know if it is anymore. Like, we are doing a lot of other things. So the feeling may not match up with the actual, logistics of it, if that makes sense.
Yes. Yeah. Edward is razzing me here in the comments. So I'm not going to have any of it. You know what? Edward, you're canceled. I'm going to kick you out of the show.
Come on. Don't do that, Edward.
No, I'm not going to do that. But like you're saying, anybody who wants to go to New York Comic Con, obviously, please do. Be safe. Be respectful of other people. All good. Let's move to a question here over on YouTube from Nelson Martinez. How long would you guys last if you're trapped in Squid Game? And also overall thoughts on the show itself. Have you guys watched the international sensation?
Well, I mean, I don't think I could do it now as well, but if I was a little younger, I mean, because we were the last ones to grow up on those kind of old, kind of games like dodgeball and shit like that. So I feel like, I would be able to do all right. But, when your life's on the line, that's a different story.
Pete, have you've watched all of Squid Game?
I haven't seen one episode. But I have an idea of that it's like this.
Okay.
Yeah. It's like the movie Dodgeball, like you were saying.
Yeah.
And they hit you in that with wrenches.
Mm-hmm. I am in the midst of Squid Game. Literally, right before we started this show, I finished the landmark sixth episode of the series, which is very good. The show is hard to watch, and it's like, it's fucked up. It's will fuck you up.
Save it for Week in Geek, guy.
No, it's fine.
I will, but this is a question.
On the show.
Okay.
But I really enjoy the show. How long would I last? I mean, a lot of it is random. I feel like I am someone who I'm like, oh, we're doing this game. I would be like, I'm going to try to win this game, despite the circumstances.
I love games.
I do love a game. I feel like I would do decent, but also it's really easy to make a mistake.
Yeah, I think I'd probably do terribly in Squid Game. Just absolutely die pretty much straight off. That's my general MO with any, how would you fare in the show where everybody dies? I'd be like, well, I'd die.
I would die. Well, but Alex, you're like number one. You're like 001. So I would be.
Oh, because I'm so old?
Yeah, I would be the 456 to take care of you.
Oh, thank you very much. I really appreciate that. I was the question also overall thoughts on the show. Okay. I did watch all of it. I thought it was very good, very well done. Production design is great. The acting is really good. I'm not 100% sure why it's the number one show in the world and everybody's talking and buzzing about it, other than the fact that it is the number one show in the world and everybody is buzzing and talking about it, and those things have their own gravity to them. But it's good and it's worth seeing, and it's another good death game show. It's just there's a lot of death game shows, you know?
Well, but what I like is about there? This one, Edward Doherty comments here, the dubs were brutal. Yes, definitely watch it with subtitles if you can, because it's just
and
the performance.
Sorry,
are
just
better.
A little note.
Yeah.
The correct subtitles. It's not the English closed captions. Just switch it to the defaults and it'll give you the correct subtitles because they're translated differently.
Yeah.
Ooh, a little insider. Nice.
But I do think the show, it's just a very addicting show. They do a great job of having multiple plots happening at the same time. So you're separated from the brutality.
Come back for more.
Well, you just like you're in the brutal part of it, and then you move out of the brutal part, and like the way they sort of manage the audience expectations is so smart, and I think smarter than other sort of death game shows, because they take away the brutality and then hammer you with it when they need to.
But yeah, overall, really good, really worth watching. I'm glad I watched it. I definitely have. We'll talk about the ending when you watch it, because I have some thoughts about the episodes that you watched.
Truly, I'm like I said, I just finished the sixth episode. I can't imagine how they're going to end this in a way that doesn't fuck me up.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Good stuff. All right, this is from Trey Bullet. In regards to Witches of Brooklyn, since Brooklyn is for witches, what classic monsters would occupy the other boroughs?
Ooh, good question.
Vampires, Manhattan, probably.
Okay.
And like so, Blade, strong Blade vibes there.
Staten Island would be like mermen or something.
No, Frankenstein, straight up, lumbering around, knocking into stuff, being really
well, that would be a mummy.
Fire. No, I think of Frankenstein.
Okay.
So let's lay out. Let's lay out the monsters so we can have a mature conversation
about werewolf.
Those. You got your werewolves, you got your Frankensteins, you got your vampires. Are we doing mermen? Are we doing sort of creatures in the Black Lagoon?
Creatures of the Black Lagoon is like Long Island. I don't know. We could just kind of leave it off. Everybody sort of forgets. Oh,
come on, dude.
You're back in the mermen?
Yeah, exactly.
No, I'm just saying, like, they're off to the side doing whatever they're doing. They're the ones everybody always forgets.
Any other monsters?
No, I think that's pretty much Invisible Man. Did we say Invisible Man?
That feels very Manhattan to me.
Invisible Manhattan?
Yeah.
That's why you said that, isn't it?
That's why I said it.
Yep. I still think vampires because vampires. They're...
You just vampires. Exposed yourself.
They're suave. They got a lot going on. They're into money. I guess I'm thinking downtown Manhattan versus like uptown Manhattan.
What? Well, you got your downtown vampires and your uptown invisible mans.
Oh, boy.
Staten Island is for Frankenstein. We've established that. Witches are for Brooklyn. Queens is... What do we have left?
Werewolves.
Werewolves.
And
mummies, I think.
Mummies.
Mummies.
Mummies and Queens.
There's a strong, like, diverse ethnic vibe going on in Queens. And
great
mummies.
Egyptian food. Great Egyptian food.
That's what I'm saying.
So...
The Bronx. Bronx is werewolves?
I mean, the Bronx could easily be mermen. There's a lot of coastline up in the Bronx.
That's true.
Like, the mermen could be rocking up there on City Island.
Juan Anana says here, cool, I'm excited for you guys to get canceled. Yeah, we're really, like, skirting some dicey territory here, to be honest.
Well, I mean, lightly.
I don't know.
I don't know what's happening.
Great. All right. This is from Josh. Favorite classic monster. Getting a strong theme here.
Of the classic Universal monsters?
Or just classic monsters. I mean, I got to go Godzilla if we're going to do, you know, if we're going to go, you know.
See, have you learned nothing that Godzilla is a gentle soul?
Yeah, I know. That's why I love Godzilla.
So why would you call him a monster? Or him or her?
People refer to Godzilla as a monster, and it's a, you know, but I don't consider Godzilla a monster.
My favorite classic monster is the scientists who torture Godzilla.
Wow.
The humans.
You are the scientist. Mm-hmm.
I guess Dr. Frankenstein is the answer.
Yeah, he was the
monster. Doing that, Alex, am I doing that right?
Yeah, I think so. I'm not 100% sure.
I think werewolves have always been my favorite of the sort of the idea of like transforming at night, trying to maintain a solid daytime life while at nighttime really speaks to me.
Werewolves, honestly, I think are the only ones of the classic monsters who are legitimately scary. Like vampires are just sort of slow moving and whatever's going on with them.
Didn't you see Blade, man? They're pretty fast.
Well, you know, it's crazy to me that mummies ever got put in as like this scary thing, because it's sort of like a little bit of a history lesson mm-hmm. really. But like, what person was like, we got to get these mummies in? They're from a couple of rich pharaohs from Egypt got buried in bandages. So let's make sure everyone knows about them. Yeah.
I mean, it worked for the mummy, but that's a kind of a different thing. So, this is from Ben the Border Collie. Venom has got to be disgustingly sticky, right? Who is the most unexpected sticky comic book character?
Unexpectedly sticky?
Yeah.
I mean, let's be honest. A lot of comic book characters are moist. Mm-hmm. They're covered in spandex. Sure.
I worry about Spider-Man all the time. He has so much stuff going on in his costume and smells disgusting, I'm sure.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, let me just shout out a couple in the comments. The Thing, he's very dry, but maybe not, says Nat Towson, which I agree. What is the actual composition of Thing? Is it like a hardened rock, but there's warmth. It's like a warm rock, and there's got to be some.
It's not lava.
It's like some sort of warm rock treatment. Like you just kind of lay them on you and get a real nice
like Reiki.
Spot.
Mm-hmm. He's like a human Reiki treatment.
Oh yeah, wow.
Really Groot nice. Is all sticky, says Kevin, and I get that because sap. You think Groot's just dripping sap all the time?
He's making a different joke there.
Yeah, no, I'm not making that joke.
Okay.
But who's sticky? I mean, Swamp Thing is not going to be someone you want to touch. Like he's
just gross and slick and dripping all over the place. Also, John Constantine. I'll throw that out there too.
What?
I don't know.
He's
probably
sticky.
Probably very sticky.
Well, he's maybe sweaty.
Mm-hmm. What is your favorite funny take on monsters? Be it so many of the same. Okay, monsters. Be it comics, films, TV, cereal, whatever. Favorite funny monster.
Cereal.
Yeah.
You're like Count Chocula. Is that?
Every time I go into the cereal aisle, yeah, and I see that, I just bust a gut. I cannot stop laughing. Like, what's going on, Frankenberry? Frankenberry. Yeah. Come on.
Did they sew together a bunch of different berries to make the ultimate horrifying berry? I mean, my real answer here is the TV show What We Do in the Shadows. Mm-hmm. Just like crushing. If you're watching this current season, super funny take on vampires in Staten Island, which makes a lot of sense.
There you go.
For our earlier question.
From Jay Citizen, Munsters or Adams Family?
Ooh.
100% Adams Family on my end. Ooh. No question in my mind. I never got the Munsters.
What?
You never got it?
I didn't get
it. I mean, you get it, right?
No, I mean, I get what it is, but I saw it and I was like, this doesn't make any sense. They're all different monsters.
I think you do get it, Alex.
The staircase was fun.
They're monsters.
Yeah, but how do they become a family? It doesn't matter. It's nonsense. Versus the Adams Family. I mean, I read the original Charles Adams cartoons, the comics that he would do in The New Yorker. I was very into those as a child.
Pete's always busting your balls for flexing, but this is where I have to stop the bus here. You're trying to drop the original cartoon, the Age of Originals.
I have them in the bookcase right over there. Yeah. I grab them.
I know.
If you want me to read you a couple.
I'm just
they're much darker than the modern movies.
Yeah, you're right. I might not be able to handle it, Alex. Please don't read those aloud. Please don't do it. Don't do it, Alex. I don't know if I can handle it. Munsters is what I watched when I watched these two things. So I get the Addams Family has sort of the darker take, but Uncle Fester, I don't know how dark he is.
Alex, Pete, what about you? I assume you're going to go for Munsters as well.
Yeah, I leaned a little bit more Munsters, but I appreciate a lot of the Addams Family. You know what I mean? Like that Wednesday meme, of her getting down is just great. I mean, that's a good time.
Well, I think the Addams Family has won the cultural war here. Mm-hmm. We're doing more of that as a people, and the Munsters have fallen to the wayside. Mm. And Munsters is actually a different way of saying monsters. I don't know if you've...
Oh, that's really interesting. I didn't notice that. We got one last one here from Edward Doherty. For Halloween this year, could you each dress as another CBC host?
Aren't we all sort of always doing that?
Yeah, we're kind of cosplaying as each other at this point.
As we all sip our giant beers.
Here, real quick. Just everybody. 1, 2, 3.
I was Alex. I was Alex when I was doing that.
I was Pete.
Yeah, we know.
Pete's nice. Not playing. Not into
thanks
it.
Thanks for committing. Yeah, I'll go. I'll go in as Pete for Halloween. Yeah. Pete, I just need to talk to you about your prostate experience. And that's what I'm gonna. That's my costume.
Oh, great!
I'm gonna go as Pete during his prostate exam.
Wow. All right, folks, that is it for your audience questions. And now we're going to move on to our next section, which is trivia. And for that, we're going to turn it over to Pete LePage.
All right.
LePage.
This is the part we give back to you, the lovely audience. It's an opportunity to win $25 free. Excuse me. To Midtown Comics online. Drinking a lot of beer.
Your body's under fire right now. Yeah,
That's true. So, if you would like $25 to...
Wait, I have a quick question. Wananada in the comments here says, you never know, Pete is a beloved improv teacher. He teaches them the no but. Is that what you said to the doctors when you got your
colonoscopy? No but.
No but.
Yes and no but.
It really bothered me how much you laughed at yourself as you were saying that, Alex.
I liked where he went there, though. I appreciate it.
It's not that
funny. All you had to do is not say that you went to the hospital and none of this would have happened. You did this. You made this happen.
Great. I'm glad when I open up and share things, you guys exploit that.
No, that was not it. It was not about sharing things. We knew about this. You inexplicably said, I went to the hospital. And then you needed to explain that. That's all.
We had to make sure people weren't worried about you.
So we need
to tell them it was just a blood exam.
I would like
you were having a special blood exam.
I would like $25.
Yeah, just say hand up, raise your hand, no but, whatever you want to put in the comments there, and we will bring you into the stream, and you will win $25 to Midtown Comics. Also on YouTube, same thing. If you want to say it, it'll just be a very annoying delay, but go for it. And I'll tell you what, if nobody does it, we could do it ourselves. Donate it to charity.
All right.
I believe you when you say that. Donate it to charity. Yeah, charity.
Yeah. All that pausing definitely makes it seem like.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
why don't you step up?
Yeah, here, I'm going to just invite Nat into the stream, whether he wants to or not.
Oh, nice. This is good. He could be boiling any
number
of...
Oh, Nat's gone. Nat's not here. All right.
Wow.
Here, I'm going to choose, for real, a charity that we're going to donate to because nobody has raised their hand. Pete, Justin and I are on. We're going to find a cool charity to give this to, so ask us some questions.
All right, great. Today's trivia is on topical comic news and a small nod to the legend, Alan Coulter. Please listen to all three options before making your selection. Here we go. Question number one to Justin and Alex. What is the name of the new Daredevil arc starting December 1st? Is it A, Devil's Reign, B, Baddest Bad Guy Like Ever, or is it C, Max Weinberg? So it's either A, Devil's Reign, or B, Baddest Bad Guy Like Ever.
I mean, I love all the B's in that second one answer, Alex. I don't know.
The B's were pretty good, but I'm going to say A.
You want to go with A?
Correct.
Well, wait, we haven't finished deciding yet.
A is correct.
Just give us one second.
B?
Okay, question number two.
I'm sort of leaning
Batman number 118. Batman is blank. Is it A, leaving Gotham, B, leaving the Justice League, or is it C, Courtney Cox?
It's pronounced Justin League.
Okay. I Courtney Cox sounds right to me. I'm going to go with C.
They have been rumored to be dating.
Leaving Gotham, or you're completely wrong.
Ooh.
Interesting. B? A lot of information here. Well, it's hard. Let's see. We have Courtney Cox, and then we had
Number three. Starting November 3rd, Donny Cates will be writing blank. Is it A, Venom, B, Hulk, or is it C, Molly Wiener? So A, Venom, or B, Hulk?
The way you said the C answer really makes me think.
I'm going to go with C as well.
Final answer.
B, Hulk. Looks like the charity doesn't win. Way to be. Way to fucking be.
Oh, all man, right, that's too bad.
Kid, we can't get you that surgery you needed.
Well, no, I guess that... if somebody had raised their hand, we would have done it.
I will say Midtown Comics does a great $25 surgery for whatever child needs it. So
that's where you got your colonoscopy, right, Pete?
Yep.
Great.
And in case you guys were wondering, we were talking about the 2001 hit, Get Well Soon.
Nice. Interesting. Very on topic. Is that a little message for yourself?
Yep.
As we all know, tomorrow is New Comic Book Day, except comics come out all the time. What are you guys looking forward to? Pete, kick it off with you.
All right. Well, I'm looking forward to a couple things. First one is Dirtbag Rapture number one. And Are You Afraid of Darkseid?
Great title. Justin, what about you? What are you looking forward to?
If I can echo Pete, and I'll say a couple comics came out this week that are coming out this week that I'm very excited about. Defenders number three, Al Ewing has been writing this book, and Javier Rodriguez has been doing the art, and it has been great so far. I'm very excited to see as it what happens as it moves forward. And then we got a new Rick Remender book coming out. Like, how are we not talking about this? A Righteous Thirst for Vengeance number one. Very excited to check that out.
While we're doing a couple of books that we're looking forward to, I'm looking forward to The Nice House on the Lake from DC Comics. Perfect Halloween spooky season read. And also Dark Ages from Marvel, which really surprised me with the first issue from Tom Taylor. His dark, twisted take on the Marvel universe, similar to the stuff that he did over with Injustice and Deceased. But now he's doing it with a new take on the Marvel Universe. So very excited to see how that picks up. And all of those books are going to be in our Stack podcast, which does roll out Wednesday, 9 a.m., both in the Comic Book Club feed and its own dedicated Stack feed, as well as the extra bonus of Pete's diagnosis this week. So that should be a lot of fun.
That's going to be fun. I'm definitely going to drop that at the end, too.
And that's it for this week's show. A couple of people we want to thank. We want to thank Sophie Escobase for being on the show. Check out Witches of Brooklyn, What the Hex?
Yes,
from Random House Graphic Novels. Also, Corin Shadmi. Check out Lugosi, The Rise and Fall of Hollywood's Dracula from Humanoids. Next week on the show, Leslie Julian is going to be here to talk Savage Wizard. Also, Frank Barbier from Astonishing Times and Kurt Pyers from Lost Falls are going to be here. So a big pack show, should be a lot of fun. Lots of other podcasts for all you to check out. Why the Cast Man, or Why the Last Man podcast, rolling out Mondays very early, tying into that Hulu show. Marvel Vision, our Marvel podcast, is wrapping up What If as of tomorrow. Riverdale After Dark, our Riverdale podcast, also on Wednesdays, wrapping up with the finale, but it'll be back in a month and a half, so don't even worry about it. Star Guys, our Stargirl podcast, rolling out every Tuesday at 9 p.m., so we got to get on that. There's a new episode going up soon. Patreon.com/comicbookclub. To support all of these shows, we do iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow. Don't forget to leave us a question in the iTunes reviews. In particular, we'll read them on the show or ask us to review a book at Comic Book Live on Twitter, Comic Book Club Live on Instagram, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast, many more. Until next time, good night.
Good night. Comic Book.